Blog Talk Radio.
Peace be on our noble and honorable listening audience. You're listening once again to another edition of Religion Means Alive. I'm your host, Imam Alfred, the host of Religion Means Alive. And this week, Mondays and Tuesdays, is the Imam Alfred Mohammedan guest. Wednesday, we have Reconnecting, a psychotherapeutic program. Thursday, we have the Health, Yours to Your Health. Friday, we have live from Selma, Alabama, the last battle station of the Civil Rights Movement with Brother Attorney Imam Yusuf Abdul Salam. Saturday, starting at 1 o'clock, we will have on these airs the Communicator with Wali Muhammad, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's grandson, Imam Muhammad's nephew, and the Communicator. So he will be on Saturday. Sunday, I will return back to the broadcast for a lecture, Establishing a Business Presence in the World. And I think it is absolutely appropriate that we have with us today a graduate of one of our great institutions, HBCU. Not only does HBCU a great institution in the world, an institution that produced Ezekiel, first president of Nigeria, Kwame Nkrumah, the first president of Ghana, independent African, and the first Supreme Court justice, and some people would argue the only African American Supreme Court justice. I think Justice Thomas may or may not take an exception to that. But we are here because we have great men. And the first African-American president was the father of our great statesman, Julius Bond. So I'm honored and privileged beyond words. And I'm absolutely ecstatic to have with us a brother that I've known when he was a child, the son of one of our great supporters of the community of Imam W.D. Muhammad, Brother Hassan. Welcome to Religion Means Alive.
Assalamu alaikum, Imam Alfred.
Walaikum assalam.
Peace and blessings, that is universal, peace and blessings to all of the radio listening audience. Again, my name is Bala Hassan. I am a proud graduate of DeLick University, Pennsylvania, class of 2014, the fantastic class of 2014, and my major was in environmental science. That is what I have for my bachelor's degree of science in. And we are here to talk to you today about the status of our HBCUs, our historically black colleges and universities, and also to shed some light on the history of the DeLick University of Pennsylvania, and also take a few calls from you all, the radio listening audience, about DeLick University and how can one participate in supporting our historically black colleges and universities, and especially Lincoln University, since it is the first historically black college and university.
Would you tell us again what was your major at Lincoln University?
My major was in environmental science.
Environmental?
Yes, science.
Yes, environmental sciences. And why did you choose that major? And I'm sure there were other institutions you could have chosen, you have gone to, but rather you chose Lincoln University. Why you chose your major and why did you choose Lincoln University to do your major?
I chose the Lincoln University, Pennsylvania. I had known some friends from my previous alma mater, my second alma mater, the Clare Muhammad School of Corona, Queens, under the leadership of Principal Sharif Adai and Imam Yusuf Ramadan. I know some alum who attended Lincoln University that was telling me about it. I had visited Lincoln University on several college tours, historically black college tours. And what always dawned upon me every time we go there, it was always rainy, it was always smelling like mushroom, because there's a mushroom farm across the street, and it's in the middle of the Amish community. It was never dawned on me that I would actually be going to the university. I got accepted to the university my senior year, along with Shaw University in North Carolina. I chose the university because, number one, it was closer to home, and number two, it was a smaller historically black college university, a smaller institution, where I can essentially fit in and adjust right instead of going to a bigger institution where you just become a statistic or become a number, and teacher-to-student ratio is more students than teachers. So you have like 100 students in a classroom versus a 25 student or 30 student to one classroom in at Lincoln. On average, is bigger than that at other universities, other schools. So the university gave me an opportunity, to give me a shot, and I took it and I ran with it. The reason why I chose Rhonda the Science is because I have a passion for the environment. I have a passion for the earth, for taking care of the earth. I have a passion for teaching and expanding on the issue, the topic of sustainability, and in particular in the world, but in particular among the African-American community. It's not just about going green and driving eco-friendly cars. It's also about social justice, the prison industrial complex, the health disparities, food deserts in our communities, why there's so many liquor stores on every corner of minority-affiliated communities, and et cetera. And bridging the gap between African-Americans and science as in general, because this is a STEM field. So I wanted to pursue my passion for science. I love science. I love the environment. I love climate change. I love weather. I have a passion for that. And Link University gave me the opportunity, plenty of opportunities, to grow and develop.
Now, I notice you are very passionate about the earth and about the environment. And we know from the Quran, Allah says that evil has appeared on the earth with what their own hands sent forth. And that, to me, is pointing to global warming, certain places on the planet. I don't want to pick on them, but I will cite China. But one has to wear a gas mask, a face mask, in order to walk the street. Should we as Muslims be concerned about the environment?
Yes, absolutely. Muslims and non-Muslims should be very much concerned with the environment, especially considering that we are being given a gift by the Creator, by God, to actually be on the earth, which is sustainable, which is air we can breathe. So we must take care of it. We are, in Arabic, it's called Khalifas. We are the caretakers of this planet. And part of being a caretaker is that you have a conscious, you think with a conscious mind, to what your actions may produce. So because with every action, there is a positive or negative reaction to what you just did. So taking that into consideration, that is the same thought process we all should possess here on Earth as far as taking care of our planet, because this is not something we created. This is something that God has created, the Most High has created, for us to live on. Out of all the planets, we have sustainable living here on Earth, so we should be taking care of that, of our beloved planet.
Brother Bilal Hassan, what are your career plans? Where do you see yourself? Maybe 1 year, 5 years in terms of career, and how you plan to make your contribution to the global society.
Well, I plan to pursue higher education. A master's degree in environmental policy and sustainable management to further my education and to sharpen my skills to prepare to tackle the everyday challenges we face here on the global society as far as environmental policy issues, as far as creating policies that are simple and yet universal to everybody, that no one is not included into the policy, and that we're not, the minorities are not forgotten, in the policies, also to move countries that are in need of these type of policies, these type of sustainable practices forward into the 21st century, because we know when we go to other places in Africa, in Asia, and other places around the world, they don't have access to clean water. They don't have access to waste management, proper disposal of waste and trash and garbage. We have a duty, I feel we have ethical duty, that if one knows better, one should tell another about what one knows. If one knows the truth, one should tell the truth. And essentially, that is what I am pursuing as far as being a truth giver and as far as giving out the proper information and giving advice to people and making plans and policies that help people, universal people, not just a particular group of people.
Let me ask you this. Attending, you graduated, you didn't just attend, you graduated from the Clara Muhammad
mm-hmm.
School. Has that had any influence at all upon your thinking? And if so, how has it?
Heavy. The Clara Muhammad School of Corona, Queens has heavily influenced me to not only think, because I was homeschooled prior to that by my mother, who was my teacher, my father, who was my principal. So I already had a firm background in at home. And when I went to the Clara Muhammad School studying in seventh grade, I was reinforced that by giving a setting where it was more also a discussion rather than just preaching the textbook. Because one can grow and understand and learn better when one knows how to apply what he or she has read or what he or she has just heard, instead of just, well, remember this is the test. No, the Muhammad School actually challenged you to think outside of the box. And that is something that is missing in education and in college and even in higher ed and lower ed education, thinking outside the box. The Muhammad School gave us that thought process to always challenge the status quo, and to come up with solutions to the problems that we face, the human problems that we face. And that is what the Clara Muhammad School gave me. And also the Quran, you know, and the ways of Prophet Muhammad, so the salam, prayers and blessings be upon him, and also Imam Muhammad's tafsir on the Quran also enhanced that which we was learning in the classroom, and outside the classroom as well.
Well, I must tell you, I was genuinely impressed, and I'm frankly, sometimes I'm easily depressed, but I'm not easily impressed, I must tell you. And I heard a discussion with you last week with Brother Alameen, he's a freshman at Lincoln, and I said, this is what a fresh person and a graduate is doing at Lincoln University, and they're having these great questions. I have grown men I give assignments to read, and they don't read it. I gave Alameen a book by Orlando Patterson. He plowed through the book. He wasn't going to get any credit for it. I don't give credit for it. But we had a very learned discussion. I would invite those to listen to that discussion last week as we teased through the rituals of blood. So I was so impressed by that discussion and so impressed by your question and your discussion that I was compelled to invite you on the program. I just, sometimes you certain people, you would like to listen to them, but I mean, I was compelled. And part of my compulsion is that you're grappling with the great question, the questions of our time and how to apply, and that you know how to engage in dialogical engagement with people outside of your community. Tell us, what was it like? Well, first off, before we go there, it seems that Sister Shirley Dyes put a great emphasis on the HBCU.
Yes.
And started a tour of the HBCU. What did any of that rub off on you?
Yes. Sister Shirley Dye has been a warrior and advocate in the educational field arena for a number of years, and she and another sister, Ms. Teresa Clark, founded the You Can Go to College Tour Committee, which was set up to give students an opportunity of African-American descent an opportunity to attend one of these HBCUs in this country. Why? Because these are of higher learning that's been dedicated to the education for people of African descent, and that is males and females. And it's important that we support these institutions. So knowing that, when I went on the college tour, I seen all the majority of HBCUs, from Lincoln to Morgan to Howard to Hampton to Shaw to Clark Atlanta, Spelman, Morehouse, etc. And I was rather impressed with the culture, of what the HBCUs was like, what they had to offer me. And I was like, I want to go to HBCU. Something about it that is different. And since
let me ask you this. Is it the fact that you had people such as Thurgood Marshall, you had people like James 67X, I mean, great historic figures to have attended those schools, great Kwame Nkrumah. Did that have any influence upon your choice of schools?
I actually did not know of a lot of Lincoln history until I got to Lincoln.
Would you please share with us Lincoln history? It is such a rich history. And give us just a thumbnail sketch of Lincoln.
Well, Lincoln University was chartered in April of 1854. As originally it was named Ashman Institute. It did not take on the name of Lincoln University until 1866 to honor the late President Abraham Lincoln. It is said... Our first black president, Horace Mann Bond, a graduate of 1923, eighth president of Lincoln University, he put in his book, Educated for Freedom, the first institution found anywhere in the world to provide a higher education in the arts and sciences for male youth of African descent. Lincoln University was started by Reverend John Miller Dickey, a Presbyterian, preacher, minister, to start off with the education of slaves at the time. You had a lot of institutions, especially some HBCUs, if you look at some of the history, was started by the church, and even the Quakers helped to start and helped to push for the education for African-Americans at the time, or slaves at the time. And at this particular moment in history, no African-American man or female was allowed to go to the Princeton and to the Yales, who were already established even before Lincoln University was established. There was no such thing. It wasn't allowed. It was seen as this is forbidden. So the only option was for people was to seek out Lincoln University, and people did. And it has led to the great men and women that we so often hear about in part of our story, the Thurgood Marshalls. I don't know, he went to Lincoln, and then he went to Howard.
I want to ask you another question that I think is relevant, is homeschooling. What was it like to be homeschooled? How long did you... were you homeschooled, and what effect it had upon you when you entered into the Clara Muhammad school system?
Homeschool helped to root me in in the ground as a strong seed, and I was given the proper nutrition, the proper water, and sunlight to be able to deal with the society. My parents want me to attend public school. For all the ills of public school, all the backwardness of our public school education, they didn't want me to go do that. So they decided to homeschool me and protect me and give me the tools and give me the books. My mother went out to get textbooks online and from the store, and she taught me from there. And I grew up based upon the library that we have at my house. And the library is rich with a lot of various books of knowledge. And our field trips were to, like, the Hall of Science or to the Museum of Natural History or to the library, et cetera, where I grew up in the library. You know, and I was surrounded by books. I've always been surrounded by books of knowledge. And that is what impacted me as far as my decision to go to later go to Claire Muhammad and later go to Lincoln was the thirst of knowledge, was the thirst to seek out education and not just read but also comprehend what one reads.
Do you have brothers and sisters? Were they homeschooled as well?
Yes, one of my sisters was homeschooled with me. Yes, my other siblings were not.
Well, let me ask you this: did you feel isolated at all that you were being schooled when you met colleagues on the street, fellow students? He said, "Well, where you go to school? I'm homeschooled." Did you feel ashamed? What were your feelings like?
I wasn't ashamed of being homeschooled. It was something abnormal at the time. It was something seen as, well, why is my mom doing that? Why is she stressing out? Or why is she going out the extra mile to get textbooks and stuff like that for me? It wasn't seen as at that young age, I didn't see it as an embarrassment or anything like that. I saw it as what it was. I was being homeschooled.
Well, did you ever attend public schools? Did you ever attend public schools?
Oh, did I ever attend public school? No.
Yes.
No. No.
Good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this should be an encouragement. You are a living testimony of a parent taking the reins of education of our children and also deciding that they're going to produce the kind of child they want and not the kind of child that the public generally wants. I mean, the general public produces a child for the public. But you obviously have been reduced to the child that your parents want and the Claire Muhammad School wants. I want you to get back to the Claire Muhammad School before we go back to Lincoln. I want to go into, and first of all, let me just identify the station. You're listening to Religion Means a Lot. We are speaking with Brother Bilal Hassan. He's a graduate of Lincoln University and the Claire Muhammad Schools and Corona Queens with Principal Shirley Dye and Imam Ramadan. And I'm going to give him an opportunity on my show, which I don't usually do, to give a commercial for an educational banquet that they're having. But I'm very proud. I wanted him to share a little bit more about the Claire Muhammad School, what it was like to transition from homeschooling to the Claire Muhammad school system. And you're listening to Religion Means a Lot. Your host, Imam Alfred. And you can join the conversation at 805-727-7013. I'm going to actually do something I don't usually do. I'm going to open up the chat line. So if you can chat, if you wish to chat, you can just send in your chat messages. We can chat. So being with a very environmental friendly person and also technologically friendly person, I'm going to experiment and push the boundaries or push the envelope to go into the chat room. Yes, Brother Bilal, continue.
Yes. The transition from homeschool to going to the Claire Muhammad School was initially different. I had a lot of different experiences going into from homeschool to Claire Muhammad School. It was a transition period for me, and being around other peers was a huge transition for me and a huge test for me. there were some obstacles that I had to deal with, and I was able to hop over it with the help and with the assistance of my teachers and also my principal, Sister Shirley Diane, the Imam, Imam Ramadan, Brother Earl Gray, my history teacher, Sister Kalila Ziyad, my English and Spanish teacher, and et cetera. These people were there for me. They were there for me. They helped in my transition. Initially, I came there as I didn't say too much. I was quiet. I kept to myself unless a question was asked of me. But I started to break out of my shell, for lack of a better term, started to break out of my shell as far as the adjustment to the social
and
atmosphere.
And I have to compliment you. You have actually crashed your shell. You didn't just break out. you crashed right on into the environment, and now you're making sure that the ecosystem, to use your term, that is the sustainability of your life and the ecosystem is intact. That's a light way to attempting to understand environmental sciences. But you have grown up in an environment, a great home environment, a great homeschooling environment, a Claire Muhammad School environment, and now you're moving out to the environment of the Lincoln University and the world of higher education.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you this. I want you to announce about the educational banquet that's going to be held, I believe it's the 20th. What day is that? Tell us.
It is June 21st. We are having the Claire Muhammad School is Corona Queens and Mashanerdean. It's having present education for a future generation. It is the 12th annual Imam Qasim Barkadeen, the late Imam Qasim Barkadeen, educational banquet is going to be held at the Langston Hughes Community Library. Langston Hughes was also a Lincoln University graduate. 100-01 Nolan Boulevard, Corona, New York, 11368. Again, it's 100-01 Nolan Boulevard, Corona, New York, 11368. Ticket information, you can contact 917-642-1367. It will be live entertainment.
How much are the tickets?
The tickets are $100 per person. You are paying for live entertainment. We will have a jazz ensemble. We will have student presentations from the students who are graduating this year from the Claire Muhammad School. You will have Dr. William J. Bentley, who is the reverend of the Learning Tree and of the church that the Claire Muhammad School is now housed in due to the fire that happened several years ago. So we are trying to get back into our building. And if you do not go, you can donate as well. We have George Khaldun of the Harlem Children's Zone as well, and also a good friend to you, Imam Afrid, Imam Askiya Muhammad, who is the chaplain for the New York City Department of Corrections and also gave Mayor de Blasio's inaugural proceeding there back in January. So there will be food, guest speakers, and that is what you're paying for. Essentially, it is for the cause of education. It's for the cause of reopening up the masjid and the Claire Muhammad School, allowing us to get back to the masjid and allowing us to finish up the electrical work that needs to be finished. So that is what this banquet is for, and we're asking for all the believers, Muslim and non-Muslim, in the Tri-City area to attend and to be in one's company to witness what we call kosher or halal entertainment and enjoy some very good food and enjoy one's company of being around one's brother and sister.
Well, I'm impressed, and that's my old neighborhood. I have fond memories of living at 103-26 Astoria Boulevard and living at 9604 Northern Boulevard. I love East Elmer's Corona. And before I leave this planet again, I pray to Almighty God that he restores me to that neighborhood. I love it. It's a neighborhood that Brother Minister Malcolm lived in.
Yes.
Minister Lord Farrakhan, the Captain Yusuf Shah, the stalwarts of the Nation of Islam, they all started right there in East Elmer's Corona. So it has great memory. And obviously the Langston Hughes Library, a real iconic institution in these United States, and I must say also I would especially be appreciative of my dear friend, and I'm a former Baptist preacher, but I've been the guest at the Antioch Baptist Church, where the Reverend Marvin J. Bentley is the pastor, on many occasions. He had invited me to preach in his church, and I have, I tell him, I hope to see him the 21st. What time does that start?
From 6 p.m. to 10 p.m.
6 p.m. to 10 p.m. This is you know, you can't go, I don't know how much it costs to go to some of these entertainment centers, but to have that kind of camaraderie, a great man, I know all three of the speakers, very closely associated with all three of the speakers. First, I have to tell you the greatness of Imam Masih Muhammad that graced these airways. Our brother George Caldoun has been one of my friends over 40-odd years. Reverend Dr. Bentley, about 30 years. So I have close to 100 years of history. And just to rub shoulders with giants, it makes you a giant. I said, if you hang out with, we know what they do, but if you hang out with giants and eagles, you generally will conquer other giants. So we are honored and privileged that this event, and Brother Imam Qasim Bakruddin was a great, great man. So, dear brothers, I wish you all, I'm going to recommend this wholeheartedly that you attend the Imam Qasim Bakruddin Memorial Event at the historic Langston Hughes Library. I want you to now, let's return from our journey on Northern Boulevard and the Clara Muhammad School and go back to Lincoln University. But prior to going back to Lincoln University, let's go to the state of the historical black colleges and universities and
yes,
how that the impacting their importance. Share with us, if you will, your own take on the historical black college. But prior to doing that, I'm going to open this mic to you, and I want you to help me over the next few months to find volunteers from all of the historical black colleges and universities. I'd like to have two of them on a week till we cover every one of them. We want to make this an annual event. Lincoln, Howard, Philander Smith, Shaw University, Clark Atlanta University, even some of the historical black colleges that have closed up. We know that this is on the ropes. Tuskegee was in trouble. Howard is on the ropes. I just, Brother Bilal Hassan, you are an environmentalist, but you're going to have to put on another hat and become a mentalist, because I just can't understand why people that have $1.3 trillion in their hand and have been sustained by these great institutions, why is it that now that the doors of choice have flung open, they have essentially abandoned us, them? Can you make a comment on that?
Yes. Just want to point out here, before I make my comment, this will help me and help the radio audience understand the importance of HBCUs. It says during the first 100 years of its existence, Lincoln University graduated approximately 20% physicians and more than 10% of the black attorneys in the United States. Its alumni have headed over 35...
Can you repeat that for us, dear Brother Bilal? Please repeat that for us.
Lincoln graduated for his first 100 years. During his first 100 years of existence, Lincoln University in Pennsylvania graduated 20% of the black physicians and more than 10% of the black attorneys in the United States. Its alumni have headed over 35 colleges and universities and scores of prominent churches. At least 10 of our alumni have served as ambassadors to the United States or mission chiefs. Many of our alumni also, Imam Offered and Real Listening Audience, many of our alumni also federal, state, judges, and several have served as mayors or cities of city managers. And I would like to point out, too, Chief Philip A. Banks in New York City, the chief of police, is actually a Lincoln University graduate himself. And we have several judges in New York City, Judge Ruth Shinningford in the Bronx, and a few other judges. And other judges and other people who have graduated from Lincoln University and who are in high position. So this leads me into my comment in regards to the status of the historically black colleges and universities, that we as a people have gotten laxed as far as supporting our own business, our own institution, that we have got gotten away from the history of our people, that we forgot about the history of our people, or that we have been blinded by the society and distracted by the society and thinking that HBCU education in particular is not the same value, or doesn't hold the same worth as a Yale or a Princeton or a Harvard. That is not true. Yes, they may have more resources to pull from than we do. However, a degree is a degree. At that point, we are in a global society. So in order for us, for HBCUs to compete in the global society, we have to be expanding, not closing. In order to expand, we need those who are established in the community, businessmen, lawyers, doctors, the common people of Main Street, to say that, listen, I want to support my HBCU in my state. How do I do that? You can pledge, you can donate, you can volunteer, you can teach. If you have a background in teaching, come. Work at the HBCU, see what it's like. Experience being around your people. Because our people, we need it badly. We need you HBCUs to help continue the education of people of African descent. Because what is happening is that more often than not, yes, we cannot go to Princeton and Yale and UCLA and these other big universities, Penn State and others. That's fine. But what about supporting your own? What about going to Lincoln or to Howard to pursue your degree in law? You have a good degree. We have a good program for law. Pursue it at HBCU. And to me, Imam Alfred and the radio listening audience, it's quite disturbing to read, even from people of African descent who slander HBCUs, who continue to slander, make fun and make mockery of the Southern Black colleges. And you yourself is African-American. Because you went to a PWI, this is what they're teaching you there, or this is what you...
And you know what I'm going to tell you, my dear brother, I have to comment on it. I'm telling you, it is obviously the reflection of a very sick person that would take an institution that they founded themselves, and it caused them to slander their institution. It's like slandering one's mother. It's like slandering one's grandmother. And God says to us in the Quran that you know, if you leave off the remembrance of me, he will leave off the remembrance of you. It doesn't really mean
Absolutely.
That God... So the institution that has brought you this far, it just seems to me to be a very sick people. You know, I won't make any comment because there is a caller in queue from 201.
Yes.
Caller in queue, you are on the air with Brother Bilal Hassan, and Religion Means Alive. Welcome to Religion Means Alive.
Yes, good afternoon, my brothers.
Good afternoon.
My name is Mac Coffin. I am... an alum of the Lincoln University
yes.
class of 1975.
Yes,
and
sir.
I am, first of all, want to say how proud I am of Brother Bilal Hassan. It was just a short period of time when I met him over at the courtyard by Marriott LaGuardia when he was being, a part of the introduction to to that class, and wow, 4 years has really gone by so fast. But I just want to say that I'm enjoying the conversation, and as a former city councilman here in Englewood, New Jersey, Lincoln continues to push out, even today, leaders.
Mm-hmm.
The next town over, Teaneck, New Jersey, the municipal judge, James Young, is also a Lincoln man. And we have quite a few council folks. The former, she graduated with my wife, Sheila Oliver, who was the first African-American mm-hmm. Speaker of the Assembly in the state of New Jersey up
mm-hmm.
until earlier this year, is a Lincoln alum. So we continue to push forward, and it is important, as it's been stated, that we understand who we are and whose
mm-hmm.
we are.
Mm-hmm.
And we get so hung up sometimes on the PWIs thinking that it's a better opportunity. Sitting next to a person of another race does not make you a better student. It comes from inside. And
mm-hmm.
that's one of the things that Lincoln and I'm sure other HBCUs
yes.
really do. I mean,
Mr. Councilman, I want to ask you a question. You know, I've known three or four political figures in this country that graduated from Oxford, that graduated from Yale Law School, and several of them had been unemployed after they had gotten out of office, and even though they had rubbed shoulders at Harvard Yard, as it were, and had gone to Yale at the law school in Stanford, and one of them was unemployed for about a year. So rubbing shoulders with Caucasians doesn't necessarily mean that they are going to let you share in our law firms and their advertising firms or their investing firms. It seems to me, and I'm editorializing, I thank you for coming on this program, but if I associate with Bilal Hassan and your name, Councilman, maybe when I get out of Lincoln and see you at the Alumni Association, I happen to attend Lincoln in his master's program. I did graduate. I'm on the Lincoln dropout, but I have to say this. But just to be on Lincoln's campus, to be at Virginia Hall, just to see the place that Kwame Nkrumah walked, Franklin Williams walked, Thurgood Marshall walked, just to be on that sacred ground, to send a shiver of pride and oblis to me. I want both of you all to comment on what the effect of this be walking in the light of history, not in a shadow. Both of you all.
And that's so important because as
mm-hmm.
I recruit for Lincoln University up in northern New Jersey, I tell them that you are walking on sacred ground. When you are sitting in University Hall or some of the historic buildings there, you are sitting in the same buildings that a Langston Hughes, that a Thurgood Marshall, that a
mm-hmm.
Judge Bruce Wright went to,
mm-hmm.
okay? You know, and here, and Judge Bruce the late Judge Bruce Wright is a perfect example, the author of Black Robes, White Justice, who grew up in Princeton. Princeton would not accept him,
mm-hmm.
and he ended up going to Lincoln University and becoming who he is today. And Lincoln helped shape that. And what isn't it ironic that years later, just before he passed away, that a Princeton University would award him with an honorary degree, trying to make up for past sins?
Mm.
And then you look at some of these student-athletes that go to these PWI colleges, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They're being cheered by 80,000 folks on a Saturday. And
mm-hmm.
once their eligibility is used up, they can't find a job or they can't go into the restaurants and people act as if they don't know them. At HBCUs, you are a family. And once you're a family, you're always a family. And we look out and
That's
we
right.
take care for each other.
That's right. Absolutely.
Well, let me ask you both, what about the possibilities of that kind of association bringing about business life and bringing political life? I mean, somebody that you were in a dorm with, obviously you have more of an affinity to than someone that you weren't in the dorm with, you took classes with. It seems to me that as we form relationships, business and political relationships are very important that they are formed at the collegiate level. Would you both agree?
Oh, I would agree wholeheartedly. As a matter of
yes.
fact, I was just on the phone yesterday with one of my fellow classmates from the class of 1975 who is Dr. Demetrius Pearson at the University of Houston. And we were talking about the impact that Lincoln had on all of our lives. I've got friends, no matter where I travel in this country and some and the parts of around the world, I look them up, and it's a reunion. And see, Lincoln nurtures that,
mm-hmm.
okay? That Lincoln experience mm-hmm. is something that nurtures that Lincoln love. As a matter of fact, I met my wife at Lincoln. And we've been married 36 years.
That's great.
And we are
a pretty powerful Lincoln Lions. Pretty powerful testimony for matrimonial, but also a powerful testimony for, hey, if you want to get a sister or brother, go to the HBCU.
That's right. That's right.
Hey, that's what people do. You know, you go to institutions with people with similar backgrounds. I heard Brother Bilal Hassan asking the question about African Americans teaching there, but I want to raise another question with you all, and that is, it is said that the largest job creator in the African American community is the HBCU. So it seems to me, instead of decreasing, we should want to expand those institutions. Like I'm one of the proponents of, they said they need 80,000 physicians in the United States, probably 300,000 nurses, and probably another 200,000 physician assistants. Now, if African Americans want to have an agenda, and I'm on the agenda, I'm pushing an agenda, let's expand HBCU. Don't close them up. Let's put medical schools there. Let's put engineering schools there. Let's open up more law schools there. Let us become the professionals. You know, we don't have to play basketball. We don't have to play football. We can compete. We can compete on the basketball court, on the baseball diamond, and the boxing ring, and the entertainment field. Why can't we compete in every aspect of American life?
Oh,
and the
HBCU
is a training institution to do that.
Absolutely. And at Lincoln and Brother Bilal will even mention to you, we're right in the middle of what is called a $10 million Student First campaign.
That's right.
And one of the things that we have to look at, we're so dependent upon handouts from the government, and we really must mm-hmm. do for self.
Absolutely.
Okay? And so while there are some other schools that are in financial straits looking for the handout, we need to continue to make phone calls and knock on the door and, by any means necessary, take care of our own responsibilities. Okay? We have to stop relying on someone else to do for us when we can do for ourselves. And we have to get out of that crab mentality.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I agree 100% with that, because what is happening now, as I said earlier, what is happening right now on our doorsteps of HBCUs is we caught the brink, we caught economic recession, we caught it badly. We caught the Parent PLUS loan situation badly. We caught these economic crises and breakdowns badly. Because why? Because we too many times wait to make a move and to wait to organize our people. Organize our people mean what? Like I said earlier, those who are established in our communities, who are businessmen. We're waiting for Dr. Dre to come give us money. He's not coming and give us a dime. Just to be honest with you, he's not. We're waiting for them to come give us a dime. The so-called celebrities in the African community, they're not. You have some who will, who are honest, like Bill Cosby and a few others, who are honest. You know, if you feel me, but I'm not going to wait for them to give us a handout either.
Amen.
Not from the corporate, neither from our own people who do not appreciate or do not know the value of a historically black college university. We cannot wait for those people to also turn their hearts. Let them, as they see the history unfold, let them turn their hearts. But as far as us, we cannot wait. We have to organize our lawyers, we have to organize our doctors, our business people, et cetera, in our community who are already established, and get them to pledge, get them to donate every month, get them to come in to see the university, get them to volunteer at the university, get them to teach a course. If we have an education background in that regard, in that field, they should. Our people need to understand CCUs are important to our well-being as a community. If we do not have these pinnacles of higher education in our community, we are essentially essentially losing our young African American men to the prison industrial complex. Let us be very real. That Lincoln and other HBCUs saved a lot of young brothers and gave opportunities to a lot of young brothers who may not have had the same opportunity from a Yale or from a Princeton. Let's just be real. Yes, we want to diversify and bring in others who have 3.5, 4.0 scholars from high school, yes. But we cannot also forget to have a healthy balance, to be sustainable, to be a healthy balance between those who are underprivileged and those who are privileged. We have to give everybody a fair and equal shot, equal opportunity. So my thought here, again, is the fact that we need to put our money where our mouth is. We talk a lot. We get on these type of engagements and shows, but there's no action to come out. I am about action. So at this point of this time, we would like to announce to the radio listening audience and those who are listening elsewhere that you can donate to the Lincoln University's $10 million Students First campaign. The money for the institution, $4 million goes to merit-based scholarship, $6 million goes to need-based scholarship. And you can call today, Institutional Advancement, that's 484-365-7440. Again, the number is 484-365-7440. That is Institutional Advancement. You're going to speak to Mr. Gavon Terman, or Mr. Rich Lancaster, who are both graduates of the Lincoln University of Pennsylvania, just to show you that we do hire back our own people.
That's right.
To work with us. So please, if you could, donate to the cause. And like Imam Offert has stated, we will be reaching out. This is a series of conversations that will be had. I'm thinking about doing a symposium of all the HBCUs and getting the African-American community to understand that this is very much important to the sustainability of our people, that we keep the doors open to our HBCUs.
Amen. Amen. Well, Iman Alfred and Brother Bilal, I have to leave to go to a mentoring program.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Kaufman.
To mentor some
Mr.
young
Kaufman,
men.
Will you give us your name again? And while you're at it, please give us how one can go to the Student First campaign. And you can, if you didn't graduate from Lincoln, didn't attend Lincoln, you dropped out of Lincoln, you want to go to Lincoln. You can still
anybody
participate
can,
in
anyone
Lincoln
can contribute
by sending
because
your donations to Lincoln.
Absolutely. And as Brother Bilal had mentioned with the number, one could also go to Lincoln's website, which is www.lincoln.edu, where there's also a link to the Students First campaign fund.
And also, would you please just earmark it that religion means a lot. We want to do some metrics. We want to see whether or not what effect we have. Like the Brother Bilal said, a lot of us talk that talk, but let's walk that walk. So we want to, our agenda, religion means alive, is an agenda, it's a ministry. And our ministry is for the uplift of the African-American community. We are not here to protest Mr. Sterling, as others can do that. We're not here to protest this, but we are for the protest, our lack of support. This is the protest movement I want to lead. I want to lead a movement to see African-Americans to be responsible for African-Americans. So is any objection, state them or forever hold your peace, that we're going forward with the Student First at Lincoln University. Give us again, both of you all, how one can donate.
I will defer because I'm leaving, but as I mentioned to the Lincoln website, www.lincoln.edu, and I'm sure Brother Bilal will elaborate on that. And it's been a pleasure speaking with you two gentlemen.
Thank you, Mac. I appreciate you calling.
Okay, take care. Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. To answer your question, Imam Offert, one can donate, those who are listening to religion means alive, the re-educating of our beloved people here in America, in the North, the American continent. You can now call starting tomorrow 484-365-7440. Again, the number is 484-365-7440. You will be speaking to Mr. Gavon Terman or Mr. Richard Lancaster, graduates from the Lake University, also employees of the institutional advancement part of the university. And also, you can pledge any amount. You can give any amount that you would like. Doesn't matter. Whatever doesn't break your pockets. You don't want to break no one's pocket. You can give whatever that you have that you're comfortable with. And also, as Max said, you can also go online to www.linking.edu to make a gift, to make a donation as well. You cannot miss that. When you miss that part, it's on your right-hand side of the screen. And you just scroll down, it says make a donation or make a gift to the university, and you can make a gift or donation to the university as follows.
Will you tell us some of the majors that are at Lincoln University? But let's, before we do that, let's go and take a call from the callers from 908. Caller, you're on the air with Religion Means Alive and Brother Bilal Hassan. We're discussing HBCUs in general and Lincoln University in particular, the oldest HBCU.
Okay, well, I'm so glad I tuned in because my daughter just graduated from an HBCU. She graduated. They had a dual program there, so she graduated with 2 degrees, and I'm so proud of her from the University of Maryland, Eastern Shore. And what I wanted to do was just ask, you know, for the children in the urban areas who never get a chance to even know anything about the schools. I don't ever see, I'm a teacher, so I never see HBCUs coming to the urban schools, coming to the high schools, talking about, going inside the schools and staying there, for 3 days or a week, giving a demonstration, even of the sororities and the fraternities and just giving the whole culture like a snapshot. I never see that in these urban schools. And the second thing that I wanted to talk about is how I had a friend tell me once that maybe a lot of these black schools should be online schools. So a lot of the people in the urban areas can't go out and live on campus. So what's happening with the online with the historically black colleges being online? So those are the two things I just wanted him to kind of talk about and just kind of think about and tell me what's going on in that area.
Well, thank you, sister, for those questions. Do you mind? What is your name?
Okay, my name is Fatima, and my daughter's name is Naima, and Naima just graduated. Hold on, with a degree in social work from a University of Maryland Eastern Shore, and a degree in sociology from Salisbury, which is a school right down the street from the university, and they had like a dual program. So
nice.
I'm very proud of her, and I'm very proud of the historical black colleges.
Yes, thank you, Sister Fatima, for those questions. I will answer in regards to online programming. Lincoln University is somewhat getting towards the online program. We have some programs that are online as far as classes, but as far as whole programs, we do not have that as yet. As far as whole programs being offered online, that is something that is in the process of being worked out. As you know, also, Sister Fatima, I'd just like to let everybody know that a lot of our HBCUs, some are ahead of others and some are not. That is due to a lot of it is due to bureaucracy and also funding for these type of things. as far as expanding, as Imam Alfred was told, while we should be closing and not expanding, I tend to concur with both of you as far as, yes, we do need to offer and expand our services fully to the online program. And God willing, we will have those things, that those opportunities up and running in the foreseeable future. Definitely worth the suggestion to your local HBCUs. If you do not have an online program, then if you're by HBCU, then you should suggest that to the Board of Trustees and to the president of that particular university to actually start working on that regard. And also be active with your alumni chapters of your University of Maryland Eastern Shore and other HBCUs to actually get this input to them so they can get that input to the bureaucracy, if you would. To answer your other question in regards to going into the urban areas, I am particularly into the urban streets every day. I walk the urban streets every day. I walk the urban streets every day. I walk the urban streets with a sense of pride, knowing that I graduated from HBCU, knowing that whoever I come across with, I tell them always about Lincoln University. I have known several of my colleagues who have done the same, who have went to their local schools here in New York City in urban areas, and Greeks and non-Greeks have performed and have also talked with prospective students, young and old, in elementary and high school. So we do, so yes, we do need to do better as far as getting out to the urban community. Yes. We are all, those who have graduated, those who are alums and professors and doctors need to take that into consideration. But also I'd like to add, too, that since you are an alum of the institution, you should take it upon yourself to do those type of things. No one should be on you. No one should force you to do that. That's something that if you loved your university so much, you will give that back to university.
Well, I didn't know. I'm not a graduate of HBCU. I'm not a graduate, but my daughter is. So I understand exactly what you're saying, and you're saying give back. And that's one of the things that I think that African Americans, just being African American, you should want to give back. And just being a human being in America that want to see people progress and do well, you should give to historically black institutions. But also what the children really, really love is to see the fraternities do their stepping and stuff, and they would love, and I don't know what's going on, but when kids in high schools see the stepping and see all the fraternities and see the brotherhood, that lures them to go to black schools, you know, historically black colleges. And it might be, you know, I know it's a shallow thing, but it's something that, you know, that we need to start, you know, pushing is getting the colleges, stop waiting for the children to go to the colleges, but have the colleges go to the kids, you know, and put on step shows and really push them into come, not push them, but kind of present the school where they might want to come to the school. See, you know, I'm from Jersey, so Rutgers is at high schools with programs. You know, you might have NYU at high schools with programs. You might have, all these different colleges, Hunter College, King College, Seton Hall, all these different schools might be coming to these little high schools, but you don't see black schools. You know, so, I mean, even if they just put on a step show, one night just of stepping, you see a bunch of brothers not ganging up on one another, not trying to beat each other up, but doing something positive and working together to do something positive, and that will really put an historical black college in a certain light. You understand? What makes historical black colleges special? Okay? Mm-hmm. Why is it, you know, why I want to go to a white school. Why do I have to go to a black school because I'm black? Why can't I go to a white school? And then you tell them historically black colleges nurture the children. Historically black colleges show brotherhood to the children. Historically black colleges show that we have it just as well as these other schools. You see, you have doctors and nurses and professionals that nurture these children. Historically black colleges give you more. See, so that's not presented when you see when these children are graduating. Mm-hmm. That's not presented. So you have children that are picking colleges only because of the football team that they like, right? Mm-hmm. So it's only because they like the Rutgers Scarlet football team or they like the Pittsburgh football team. Nobody is presenting colleges where we take personal interest in you personally. See, so this is the angle that historical black colleges can run. This is the angle that they can use to help black people, right? That's right, I said it, black people come to the college and be the first ones in their college, the first ones in their families to graduate. So you know, I mean, I didn't want to go on a tangent, but I think it's important to note that you know, I see children all the time, you know, going into college from high school or going into elementary school to high school, and I say, what college you want to go to? And they tell me some white institution, and I say, why? And they say, because they offer this, this, and this. And I say, well, do you ever meet anybody in that field? And they say, no. Well, black colleges offer that. So these are the kinds of things we need to go to our children and not wait for them to come to us. And that's all I wanted to say in that regard. And thank you so much for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you
for calling.
We have a caller.
Thank you.
And then we have a caller from, I think we have a caller from Orlando, Florida. Caller, you're on the air.
Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum.
My name is John Ali, and I'm from Daytona Beach, Florida. Originally, I was born there, but I'm living in Orlando. My age is 59, and I'm married, and I've been in Florida most of my life. I am a Vietnam vet, and I've seen tons of student-athletes come through high school and eventually end up on the streets selling drugs or getting into crime. In fact, Florida is known for athletic prowess, especially among African-American youth. University of Florida, Florida State, University of Miami, Florida Gulf Coast, and even the historical schools, Bethune-Cookman University and Florida A&M, have prestigious athletic programs. But I also want to let the listener, the previous caller, especially the sister, know that there are individuals in Florida who are trying to work with our youth and get them into the areas of science and math as well as athletics and entertainment. Now, I have a group called the Soul Food Group. I haven't pushed it. I have a degree in marketing. I haven't pushed it like the way I want to. I'm just like most brothers. I'm struggling to make a living. But inshallah, hopefully this year, I can get it started where I can reach out to the high schools, the guidance counselors and the school principals, and even go to the school board. One thing that we have to do, we have to be intelligent about how we project ourselves. Imam Wahid Muhammad told us that we have to go as ambassadors when we go out and meet our Christian brothers. And we're not looking at race. Race is not the issue. The issue is making individuals quality beings, human beings. Imam Muhammad was known as the leader of human salvation for all people. And this is how we have to go at it. We have to look at it from a big perspective, not just so much the circle of black people, because there are a lot of people in Florida, and I'm quite sure all over the country, who are suffering. I was right in the midst of the Trayvon Martin incidents. A lot of incidents are taking place in Florida, and I know around the world, and there are a lot of injustices that are being done simply because of the fact that people don't have the knowledge. And we have to address the issues. My suggestion is that sisters and brothers, wherever they're at, get with our Christian brothers and the community groups that are trying to do positive things. We have to link up with them because we don't have the financial resources. And even among the Muslims themselves, we're going to have to form co-ops. We're going to have to do nonprofit groups, whatever it takes to get the resources so that we can be able to reach the community at large. But I just wanted to let the sister know that there are people who are trying to reach out and help. But all of us need financial support and moral support.
I agree. 100%, brother. 100%.
And I love the program, and I've already made a desire, a pledge within my own heart to help financially contribute to supporting the Blog Talk Radio program.
Thank you, dear brother. Thank you. And the Daytona Beach, the city of Mary McLeod Bethune, and also the city of Howard Thurman, the great Dr. Thurman from Daytona Beach. So we send shout-outs, and you're a great ambassador of that great city and the population. I want to go back now to the historical black colleges and university tour that Sister Shirley Dye, the principal of the Claire Muhammad school system in Corona, Queens, has done. Tell us more about that tour and when it will take place. And then we're going to go back and revisit the Lincoln University Student First campaign.
Yes. You can go to the College Talk Committee has been running for over 25 years now. It's been responsible for putting African Americans into college, into universities of HBCU character. It's been run by Principal Sharifa Dye and Ms. Sister Dorita Williams-Clark for a number of years. It's a nonprofit organization, and basically they sponsor the Black Historical College Tour that happens every spring fling in April. I mean, every spring fling, every spring break for public schools here in New York City in April. It has the sponsored SAT and SAT preparation courses, parents' financial aid workshops, aid and unpaid internships, scholarships, and financial assistance finding program as well. So this program, like what the brother had stated before, working together with the Christians, of course, is just working together with the Christians community and the churches here in New York City. That is what Sister Shirley and Sister Dorita have done wonderfully, working with the city councilmen, the senators, Senator Malcolm Smith, the mayor Michael Bloomberg during his tenure, de Blasio during his 10-year, and others in the local area. They have worked well with to help put 5,000 students enrolled to college and across the country. So it's a successful organization. It's something that needs constant support. So that is why they go out and look for people like people from the political arena, from the business arena, to put together the tour. I'm not sure what date the tour will be next year. I will be happy to share that information to you all again when the information is released to me. But they are having a moving up ceremony. If you're in New York City area, you can go to College Tour Committee is having a moving up ceremony to honor the students from 9th to 12th grade that they have in their program who are moving up to 10th grade, 11th, or even graduating from the program and going to college.
When will this take place?
This is June 12th, Thursday, June 12th, 6 to 8, 9 p.m. at your college, the faculty dining room, 2D01 is the room number. It is at 94-20 Guy R. Brewer Boulevard, Jamaica, New York, 11432. So that's your college faculty dining room, 2D01, 94-20 Guy R. Brewer Boulevard, Jamaica, New York, 11432. That is, you can attend that or support that, and you can meet Ms. Clark and meet Sister Shirley if you have not met her. They are wonderful people. They've been fighting very hard for the students and for the young people, and they are definitely advocates for education for young African-American men and women. So definitely support that.
Yeah.
Well, Brother Bilal Hassan, I have to tell you, I'm not easily awestruck. In fact, I'm rarely awestruck. But I must say, what I see of you has given me tremendous hope. The seed of leadership, that you're not a future leader, you are a leader. And you have literally taken the bull by the horn and led the bull right to the pasture. And greenness, since I got to be green conscious since you were environmental studies major. I have to be green conscious. I think as long as we have minds like yours, we are in good shape as American citizens, as African Americans, as Muslims in the Association of Imam Muhammad, and as African American people. I want you to just share with our audience, or recapitulate, your education as it started at homeschooling, Claire Muhammad School, and then the African American Historical Black College, Lincoln University. What influences did those three things have on institutions, Baba, have on you? And kind of tease it out, because it seems to me we're making a new global citizen when we see people such as yourself.
Well, it has made me a universal person. I think go about things in a universal way. I see things in the broad spectrum. I came to the homeschool environment, went from there on to Grand Muhammad School, where I was around other students from not even just African-American, but from different ethnic backgrounds, you know, from different countries, Muslim students from Afghanistan, Muslim students from Pakistan, et cetera, et cetera. So then going to Lincoln University and being around just everybody from everywhere, from every state, from Alaska to California to the Caribbean to Africa to Europe to even to the lower 48 here in the state, I have met tons of people, and it has allowed me that experience. Those experiences have allowed me to see things in the universal spectrum. So when things is mentioned that we need to work together, we do really need to work together among the African Americans, but among everybody else. We do need to work together to build the sustainable communities that focus around our institutions of higher learning. So that, with that being said, the sustainable community should look, you have your place of worship, whatever you call it, the mosque or the church, you have your schools, you have your businesses, you have your other establishments around that. That is a sustainable community that supports its own, so therefore money comes into the process. You have non-for-profit, you have lawyers, you have doctors, you have all of the things to build a community. And in order to build a community, you need the service of those people. Those people who have those skills. So you need to bring in those people who have skills, and we need to come together as a unit to put together our skills. This is what I've learned through my experience, because it doesn't work if you're running a dictatorship, or it doesn't work if you're wondering if you're running a dysfunctional system. It doesn't work that way, and we can't wait for someone to give us a corporate, like I said earlier, a corporate hookup, and one of these big time celebrities to give us a big check, because a big check is not promised to us. And Elijah Muhammad said perfectly that we need to do for self. And this is the motto. These are the models I live by. That as far as building sustainable communities, that is a must. So this is what I learned out of coming out through the experience of homeschool Claire Muhammad and Lincoln University of Pennsylvania, that we need to establish our mode of sustainable communities here in the lower 48 and take that model and spread it to the countries overseas.
Some of our earlier callers didn't know the history of Lincoln University, being the first historical African-American college. I believe, tell us when it was founded, who it was founded by, And then share with us some of the illustrious graduates, including Kwame Nkrumah, the first president of Nigeria.
Sure. Again, Lick University was chartered in 1954 as Ashman Institute. Was later changed to honor President Abraham Lincoln in 1866. It was founded by Reverend John Miller Dickey and his wife, Sarah Emmeline Crescent, which is a hall on campus named Crescent Hall. And we also have a hall named after Reverend Dickey as well, who were of the Presbyterian faith, who helped to establish and find this great historically black college on the grounds upon which they stand now to educate the free slaves, the free African, male of African descent. Women were not in the picture to later on during Lincoln's tenure. It was originally just for men, male youth of African descent. Then women were accepted later in our history. Some of the illustrious alumni that we have produced, Brother Mac has put in perspective of some of the recent brothers and sisters that we have now still living amongst us. We have produced Langston Hughes, class of 1959, of course, world acclaimed poet of the Harlem Renaissance. Thurgood Marshall, 1930, who was a roommate with Langston Hughes during his tenure, who was the first African-American justice of the U.S. Supreme Court. You have Roscoe Lee Brown, actor Roscoe Lee Brown, class of 46. Jacqueline Allen, class of 74, judge of the Court of Common Pleas in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. You have our Kwame Nkrumah, class of 1939, well, first president of liberated Ghana. We also have Name Ezekwe, class of 1930, Nigeria's first president of their liberated country. You have people like Gil Scott Heron, who unfortunately did not graduate from Lincoln, but attended Lincoln for 10 years. So essentially, if you attend Lincoln for a couple of months, I forgot how long it was, but if you attend Lincoln for a couple of months, you're considered alum. So we consider Gil Scott as Lincoln alums, and he was a great performer on campus, as he was a great performer later on when he left Lincoln. He was also a great poet. Those are some of our distinguished alums. From the past, we have, of course, much more.
I think a lot of people don't know that the beginning of the historical African American colleges, the private ones, until recently, I mean, I said recently in the 50s, they had African American presidents. I mean, they had Caucasian presidents. I think President Woodford, the United States Senator from Pennsylvania, his father was the president of Lincoln. But if I'm not mistaken, Julian Bond's father, Horseman Bond, was the first African-American president of Lincoln University.
Yes, he was. Horseman Bond was our first president, first African-American president of Lincoln University, eighth president of Lincoln history. We have a lot of people who were related to Dickey and who came in with Dickey, who became presidents after Lincoln was founded. We have had more African American presidents. We had Dr. Robert R. Jennings, who is our president now. We had Dr. Arthur V. Nelson, who was our president before, and Dr. Sudaska, who was our first woman, I believe, women president, if I'm not mistaken, from African descent to be our president. So we have had a turn of tide from just having Caucasian or European presidents. So that shows you the growth and development of our people. And so we have come equipped with those individuals that can lead the university in the right path. So we do have a lot of support from our local community where we're at, Oxford, and not that far from the city of Brotherly Love, which is Philadelphia, which is 40 minutes away from there, and also 40 minutes away from Baltimore, Maryland, and Washington, D.C. as well. So we do have a lot of support from our our constituents who have to be even Caucasian and African American, because we understand that we have to brand the university in a certain way because we live in a global society. We live in a global society in order to compete. We have, again, like sisters, like the brother said, we have to work together. So in order to compete, we have to change our brand and change what we represent and change even our image. As Imam Muhammad said, we are stakeholders. We are ambassadors for this movement. And we cannot go into meetings and walk around with our pants hanging below our waist. We can't afford to do that at this point in time because it continues to paint the negative stereotype that's being helped to be promoted by those who control the industries, the hip-hop industry, and et cetera. We can't afford. So we have to change our brand. We have to diversify our viewpoints. We have to become more global in our viewpoints. Again, we won't have the Black Eyed Peas syndrome where we just see black people. As Imam Muhammad said, we won't have the Black Eyed Peas syndrome, but we do want to... Serve our people first.
Yes, the Black Eyed Peas. Let me ask you this. Would you, we've gone from the Black Eyed Peas syndrome to the rap music to trap music. And now it's just amazing that people will put out something for people that is really putting those people down and tell those people that they actually have trap music, something that would trap you off. I mean, rap wasn't enough that you wrap people up. But now you got them trapped off. And if you listen to the trap music, it would seem to me it's the same ranting of a mental ill patient. Anyone who's worked in a mental hospital know that that kind of sound is the product of a mentally ill, generally schizophrenic, psychotic patient. I want to ask you, as we talk about rebranding, before we get to your career plan, what do you see as a rebranding, firstly, of the African-American male as a global responsible citizen? And how has the being homeschooled, then being schooled in the Clara Muhammad School, and then being schooled at Lincoln University, I mean, a university that, in my opinion, has been the foundation for creating a new African man. And when you think of Kwame Nkrumah, Thurgood Marshall, Brother Ezekwa, the great president of Nigeria, I know he would be shuddering in his grave to think about Boko Haram, that right in his next door, right there in his country. It just, to me, is just amazing. Well, would you let's talk about that rebranding for the next few minutes.
The way I see the rebranding of the African-American male is critical piece. The critical piece is that we have to be, if you're a father listening right now, if you're an uncle or whatever, male figure, imam, minister, whatever in the African American community, whatever position that you, if you hold a position, doesn't matter if you hold a position or not, you're still an ambassador for your people. You have to take our men, these are young people growing up. You have to mentor them. You got to form mentorship. You got to. You have to form good relationships with our young African American men on the street. You have to take them off the street. And if you have the means to take them off the street, be it you have a center, a youth center, or a school, or a gym, get them off the street. We have to consider ourselves blessed. Because, yes, we may not have all the means, but we have people with the skills and talents to make the means happen. And it doesn't have to be sometimes it has to be money. It could just be taking in brothers off the street and showing them the ropes of how to do business the right way. To do business as far as opening up your own business, selling lemonade or being a carpenter, or teaching them a skill, be a mechanic. Do something with your life if you want to be successful. We have the skills, which we do. Which we have the skills, we need to help our young African-American men by not talking down to them constantly browbeating them all the time about why their pants hang so low. Why don't you tell the brother why and where that type of mentality came from? Why don't you show him what a young African man looked like. Not all the time dressed with a suit, but it just means decent attire, modest attire. We have to be models and mirrors to our own brothers and sisters. That's what the Prophet Muhammad prayers and blessings be upon us said. You have to be a model for your brother and sister. You have to be able to pull each other's coat when you see them going wrong. And it all takes is one example. One example, we have to use psychology and a strategy that will get the children, the young man's attention. You see hip-hop. Hip-hop has now turned into hip-hop. That's the culture now is being promoted. It's not hip-hop anymore, it's hip-hop. Now you have, out of hip-hop, you have trap music, you have rap, and et cetera. You have people, they're glamorizing people like Miley Cyrus. They're glamorizing people like 50 Cent. They're glamorizing people like Jay-Z. But is that really success, though? Why don't we show them what success looks like? Christopher Gardner, people like Bill Cosby, people like Malcolm X, people like Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Muhammad Ali. Show them images that they can relate to, that this is success.
Don't forget Dr. Maya Angelou.
Dr. Maya Angelou, yes, for the sisters. For queens.
Yes,
but for the men too. Dr. Maya Angelou, to teach the men how to respect the women. And so there needs to be a universal strategy that also teaches the women too. The sisters need to get with the sisters too, because what happens, the psychology is wherever the man sees the woman go, that's what we will follow. If she's following a crowd of people, we will follow her, because we're after one thing only, to appease our appetite. So we have to look closely at the situation, and also mentorship, and also bonding with our young men, giving them the opportunity to speak, giving them open mics, giving them opportunity to come in, having symposiums of HBCUs, having symposium of success, teaching them how to do certain things, resumes, et cetera, because this is what they're going to need to combat the world, because they're not getting that from public school. That is why public school.
Well, you know what, dear brother, you've been put on the spot right now. I'm going to ask you to host as frequently as you can. I know you're busy. We will find out what your academic plans further will be, but we want you to host an HBCU hour. We want to bring the history of African-American God. We'd like to hear from each one of these schools. We've heard from Lincoln. We hope to hear from Lincoln again next week. You're all in the middle of a campaign. I talked with someone from Tuskegee. But before we close the broadcast out, I want to ask Brother Deep Shack if he would come to the mic and give us the particulars for the Father-Son Men and Boys Association breakfast. This is an organization that I'm affiliated with. Father, Son, Men, and Boys Association does mentoring with young men, mentored old men, really. I mean, a lot of men need to know how to be a father. You know, you just don't have, you don't come in the world knowing how to be a father. You come, it's a new experience, and one has to learn it. So Brother Deep Shaka he's the president of an organization. He's doing a marvelous job. Brother Deep Shack, if you're available now, and you're a hard-working brother, if you would just give us the announcement for the Fathers, Son, Men, and Boys Association breakfast that will be held on Father's Day. Are you there? I don't have a particular address, but it will be the Fathers, Son, Men, and Boys Association Father's Day breakfast. I don't have a particular address for the Father's Day. There will be a breakfast. There will be a panel discussion, and the guest speaker will be Sister Halima Muhammad, who was actually a participant or a host for the historic meeting of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. So I don't know, Brother Adib, are you there?
I can't get my phone or anything. I'm host. Oh, okay.
Yes, sir. We hear you now. Tell us the address. Well, they come up to
Brother Emmanuel Alford.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You got. Excuse me, brother. I just bought a new telephone, and I'm trying to get back into my phone to get to press one on the dial. So, you know, it's hard for me to find it sometimes. So, you know, just be patient with me. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. But thanks anyhow for, you know, calling and, you know, allowing me to come in to make some announcement in reference to the upcoming event that we have, which is on Father's Day, June 15th. It's going to be a Father's Day breakfast with the speaker, our beloved sister Halima Muhammad. She will be there as our guest speaker, and we will have a panel discussion after she gets through talking with Brother Askia Muhammad, as well as others we're looking to have on the panel. And this will be located at 62-70 Howard Street in Irvington, New Jersey, June 15th, which will start at 9 a.m. until 1 p.m. And the tickets are $20 in advance for adults, $10 for children. And at the door, the adult tickets will cost you $25, and the children will cost you $15. And all proceeds from this program will go to sponsoring, help to sponsor our annual Family Day outing, which will be in Weequake Park on August 3rd. This will be our 17th year of doing this, wherein families of all race, nationality, or religious background comes out into the park and enjoy each other's company. And we are inviting the whole community to come on out and celebrate, you know, with us in the park, as well as come on out to support us with the Father's Day breakfast at the Warrior Research and Development Center in Irvington, New Jersey. And I think that's about it at this time. And thank you very much, ma'am.
Bilal, will you please just close us out by giving us the addresses to how we can contact the Lincoln University? I just want to take a few more minutes, extra minutes. I think we need to have some extra minutes. Just for the fact to tell us what programs Lincoln University offers. There may be some student right out here that you might know a student, doesn't have any school yet to go to. And I'm going to take this opportunity to invite you to attend the school that I attended, Lincoln University, not a graduate of it. It's a master's program. They also have a master's in human services program there, too. But we should, and I think they now have started, they have a master's in education. Lincoln University is not only an undergrad school, but I'm going to leave it to Brother Bilal Hassan and tell you that you're a wonderful product. If I could grow up and be Bilal Hassan, I would definitely go to Lincoln University. So, I mean, if I had to redo my life, I'd start right being homeschooled. I'd go to Prophet Muhammad School, and then I would go right on into Lincoln University, where great leaders are being made. Share with us some academic programs and how one can access Lincoln University for academic purposes, and also how one can access Lincoln University for contributory purposes.
We have a wide range of programs. With this name a few, I would not name all. We have a wide range of academic programs ranging from the School of Natural Sciences and Mathematics, Biology, the Nursing Program, the physics department. If you want to be a physics major, if you want to be a chemist, you will have chemistry. The engineering program is coming soon. We have political science. We have sociology. We have anthropology. You have mass communications. A mass comm major is pretty big. We have our own radio station and TV station on campus. High-tech equipment, Apple products, and top-of-the-line equipment for editing, et cetera, purposes. So if you're into radio and television, If that is your expertise, then we welcome you to check out and take a tour of Lake University over the summer and actually see the studio for yourself. It's a very beautiful studio, state-of-the-art equipment, very expensive equipment at that. We have our languages, our Arabic, Spanish, French, a whole host of other languages. We have a lot of clubs and organizations that students can get involved with on campus. So I will not list all of them, but a few of them is I was part of Muslim Student Association on campus. You also have the chapel. It's a non-denominational chapel, so if you are Baptist, Protestant, whatever, it doesn't matter. It's non-denominational, so you can get engaged in interfaith dialogue with all of us as a group. You also have Black Men in America, which is the organization I was part of, which was to teach one about the history of our people and where do we go from there. The NAACP is hopefully to be active again as a student organization on campus this year. Boys to Men Mentorway Program, which is something like the program that you have offered out at Irvington, New Jersey. We help take in freshman men and mentor them throughout their transition freshman year, et cetera, et cetera. Wide range of organizations you get involved with as a student. We also have career services to help you with your internships and resume building, et cetera. We have a tutoring. You cannot say that you cannot graduate or you cannot finish your freshman year with a bubble to BO or better, because the services that are offered are unique, and it's 24/7. You can seek help regardless. That is wraps up that part of Lincoln. I think also to donate to the Student First campaign. Reminder, $4 million goes to the students for merit-based scholarships. $6 million goes to the students for need-based scholarships. There's $10 million in total. I think we're at 17-18% of that $10 million. So we could use a couple more dollars, and your dollar could, in fact, use that number. Again, for your number to make your gift or your donation is 484-365-7440. Again, the 484-365-7440, and that is Institutional Advancement, Office of Institutional Advancement. You will be speaking to Mr. Kovan Terman, also, or Mr. Richard Lancaster, who is our former students who now work at the university and taking care of business at our university.
What offers?
Yes, sir. Let me ask you this, dear brother. What are your career plans? What will you be doing after you have now graduated class of 2014 on behalf of the entire staff and membership support group of Religion Means a Lot?
I am going pursue my master's degree, as I said earlier, in environmental policy and sustainable management. I'm currently checking out several grad programs here in New York City area. From there, I will pursue my passion for to build the sustainable communities, as far as a consultant for businesses and for schools to how they can become more sustainable. What methods do you need to switch to save money, or to bring in more students, or bring in more clients, et cetera, and what it can be used for branding, as far as, because this is a whole branding piece that they can use to brand their establishment, and also just to do to continue to be an HBCU advocate, to continue to build a network, as far as my network is.
Well, we're gonna add another title to your. We're gonna have a discussion about having another title to your name, and that is that you're a radio host, HBCU, and be a producer of one of those shows. So we hope to do that. We hope you will accept. We'll talk to you offline, but we have spoken with an excellent product of homeschooling, Claire Muhammad School, as well as the Lincoln University, the illustrious, illuminated Lincoln University, the place where leaders are made. Lincoln University,
yes,
no doubt about it. Lincoln University, the leaders are made. So until tomorrow, we're going to replay tomorrow's broadcast, the Tulsa Massacre, an interview with Brother Imam Arthur Farrakhan. We want to hear that. Wednesday, we will come back again with Brother Nazim Rashid, reconnected to your child self. Thursday will be the healthcare. Friday we will have from alive from Selma, and Saturday we will inaugurate Brother Wali Muhammad, the communicator. He will be on from 1 to 3. That will be a new hour, but we also will be back at 6 o'clock for an open forum. Peace be on our noble and honorable listening audience. You've listened once again to another edition of Religion Means Alive. Peace be on you.
Peace be upon you.
Thank you, Brother Al-Hassan.
Thank you.